Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Geez, an extended afternoon block. We've got afternoon coverage for you for the next 4 hours, 3 till 7. That leads you up to Calgary Flames warm up at 7 o'clock, and then an 8 o'clock puck drop from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington. It is preseason game number 3 for the Calgary Flames, and we've got it for you here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. 8 o'clock face-off, 7 o'clock warm-up. Lou and Wilsey with the call. I've got your pregame at 7. So what can we tell you about tonight's lineup? Well, as you'd expect for a preseason game on the road early on, it is not rife with star power, not rife with veterans. Instead, they're going really young, and they're giving some interesting names opportunities. In fact, a good chunk of players that we're talking about fighting for spots in the lineup are going to be on the ice tonight in Seattle. The most, the most seasoned veteran from a Flames standpoint is Dylan Dubé. Dubé will play the left side on what I guess you would call the top line. It was the line that skated first. So it's Dubé on the left with Cody Eakin in the middle and Walker Dewar on the right. Then you've got Connor Zary in the middle between Adam Rzyczka on the left and Sonny Milano on the right. Ben Jones will center Jacob Pelche on the left and Matthew Phillips on the right. And finally, Cole Schwint centers Alex Gallant and Adam Klapka on the left and right, respectively. Your D pairings, left to right, Mackey with Milosh, Gilbert with DeSimone, Valimaki with Kuznetsov. Vladar and Dansk are your goalies. We just don't know 100% who's starting. And the only reason I say that is because usually on a home game, you know that whoever is in the home net is your starting goaltender. Flames were 41 for 41 on that last year for home games. The problem here is that they were practicing at home, morning skate at home, but then on the road. So we're not exactly sure if it's going to be. My guess is Vladar starts, but I don't know for sure. Vladar or Dansk, and maybe they split some time like they did on Sunday night when Vladar played 40 and Dansk played 20. Nonetheless, those will be your two goaltenders, and we'll find out at warm-up exactly who's starting. And it's the preseason. Yeah, I don't know if anybody is really worrying too much about starting goaltenders, but Vladar and Dansk are your two goalies on the road in Seattle tonight. 8 o'clock faceoff right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Okay, lots to get to on your one-hour Sportsnet Today program on this Tuesday. We're going to talk some fantasy football with our boy Andy McNamara in just minutes, and also later on this hour, diving in to the history of the NHL draft. I'm really excited for this conversation with both Bruce and Evan Dobigan. They're going to jump in on their new book called The Inexact Science, The 6 Most Compelling Draft Years in NHL History. That's all coming your way on Sportsnet today. But as we do this right now, we welcome in our buddy Andy McNamara, our Sportsnet 960 fantasy football expert. It's Tuesday, which means the waiver wire is hot and maybe more hot going into week 4 than it has been at any time so far this season. We got waiver wire stuff, and of course, we've got Ask Andy. If you've got questions, get them in on the text line at 960-960 for our fantasy expert, Andy McNamara. That'll take up a bulk of our chat with Andy. If you're looking at the waiver wire, if you're looking at start-sit problems, whatever the case may be, get them in at 960-960 for our boy Andy McNamara right now, who we say hello to on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Hello, AMC. How we doing?
Good, Pat. How are you, buddy?
I am great. I'm great on this Tuesday. I was not so great on Sunday for a third consecutive week. Just absolute garbage luck in fantasy football. I'm starting to wonder if I know anything about the sport at all. It does not matter what I do. I've got 3 teams. It doesn't matter what I. It's the worst start I've ever had in 15 years of playing this stupid game. I'm having a rough start. How did you do in week 3?
You know what? I won. Oh, okay, so I'm on 5 leagues. One league, Pat, I had no business winning. Like, I DM'd the guy I was playing. I was like, I have no business winning this week. My team, this is my team. My lead receiver was Greg Dortch from the Cardinal. Greg Dortch. Sounds like a repairman is coming to your house. Dortch Plumbing or something. Dortch was my top guy. Carson Wentz, who was trash, was my quarterback. The saving grace, Jamal Williams, who would have thought, which was a last-minute pop in the flex, okay, let's see what happens. Jamal Williams was in there and saved the day for me. And it's no coincidence that that gentleman is right at the top of my waiver wire pickups if he's still available in your league.
So, I mean, let's jump in. Do you want to go position by position? You just want to jump in on players that are of interest to you? Because, I don't know, because I've had such a poor start to my season, I've been very much dialed into the waiver wire every Monday night and every Tuesday, but it has not been the sexiest acquisition list. It's not like there's a ton out there. Like, you know, I was thinking about Williams in Arizona, but then it turned out James Conner played, so I'm glad I didn't blow my entire fab budget on that. Like, there just has not been a lot on the waiver wire, but it feels like week four is a little bit of a different story.
Well, you know what? I would still say there's not necessarily that clear-cut guy where you're going to say, okay, I'm going to part $50 of my fab on it for my fantasy budget, for example. However, this is why you listen to hashtag Ask Andy right here on Sports at 960. It's because we got those little gems, those ones that you dig into a little bit. So I mentioned Jamal Williams. Now, DeAndre Swift, banged up, may not play. Even if he does, Jamal Williams has proven standalone value. However, Patty's owned in 62% of most leagues. So he might be on there. If he's sitting there, go grab him. But I thought, well, okay, if he's not, we got to go. I usually like to try to find those guys owned in less than 50%. And somebody who, it seems like the last couple of years too, nobody wants to play him, nobody wants to put him in their lineup, but damn it, he gets you double-digit fantasy points almost every single week in PPR, and that man's name is J.D. McKissic of the Washington Commanders, and he did it for a second consecutive week on double-digit. And that's a guy for your running back. If you're thinking, okay, I got somebody injured, I need a flex spot, my measure for success is if you get a waiver wire guy, you put him in your lineup, and he gets you double-digit fantasy points, even if it's 10, that's a success. And I think J.D. McKissic can be one of those guys if Jamal Williams is not there on your waiver wire at running back.
So Williams, in a deeper league, he's almost certainly on a team.
Yeah.
But if you're in a more shallow league, absolutely, it's at the very least worth a search. And, yeah, J.D. McKissic is one that I think definitely is going to pop off the page if he's not owned in your league. What about a couple of the other running backs that are starting to pop up near the top of waiver wire power rankings for week four? There's Chicago's Khalil Herbert, and there's Minnesota's Alexander Mattison. Two absolute handcuffs, we know that, but two guys that may have some value for week four and beyond.
And that's why exactly the word you use, handcuff. These guys are only relevant if the starters in front of them do not play. Now, David Montgomery, from what I was seeing today, looks like he is, the injury is not as serious as they thought. Looks like he's trending to possibly, but still, doesn't hurt to have him in. I have Montgomery in one of my leagues, and I have Herbert as the handcuff there. Madison, same situation. We've seen when Madison, and last year Herbert as well, if they get a chance to get starting reps and Cook or Montgomery is not in the ballgame, they ball out. Like, these aren't your dud disappointments. You know, these guys play well. So it really depends on, can you give somebody up on your team now on your bench for one of those players who may play this week, may only play for you this week? Where does that come down to? So I don't mind that at all. Another guy that's getting some run, Sam Perine as well. Joe Mixon was banged up a little bit, but left with an injury late in the third quarter. But it's still undetermined. So P. Ryan, again, is one of those speculative ads where you're like, okay, is he going to be there? Should I take a shot on him? Another guy, Jaylen Warren for Pittsburgh. Najee Harris has been healthier, but that's someone just to put I have a little star beside him in case Harris gets hurt or you hear anything. Jaylen Warren is the clear standalone number two back also.
Jump in on receivers for us, and then I got one tight end question for you. Who should we be looking at? Give us a few of your favorite waiver wire receivers for week four.
Man, you know what? The receivers I'm not nearly as excited about as, let's say, a J.D. McKissic or a Jamal Williams. I hope people, okay? I hope you're not biting on the Mac Collins bait of the Raiders, okay? Don't be the fish in the sea. That shiny lure, it's a trap. Don't do it. No, that was a tremendous game for Mac Collins. Good on him. 158 yards, eight catch. Not going to keep happening. That is a foolish ad. If you're in some sort of waiver race and Mac Hollins, you're jumping at him. I'm not, and I'm not going to. Most added guys so far in Yahoo leagues going into today. Unbelievable. Zay Jones, you know what? Zay Jones, I had the chaser effect. Week one, 12.5 fantasy points in PPR. I picked him up for week two. Did nothing, 5.3. I'm like, yeah, get out of here, Zay Jones. Guy goes off 24.5. Phil, you know, I don't mind. Again, if you have someone on your bench, you know you're not going to use. Zay Jones is a possession guy. Is in that. He's going to be underneath Kirk. He's with Marvin Jones. Jacksonville getting better. They look good. Philadelphia, though, is playing at a next level. I wouldn't really want to be starting, if I don't have to, too many Jaguars. The following week, though, you get Houston, which is a nice play. So, Zay Jones. Isaiah McKenzie went off. He was one of my picks last week to put in with Gabe Davis, not at 100%. And if you listen to me, it really paid off. Again, he is somebody that he's going to have those big days. But if everybody's healthy, if he doesn't get a couple catches, 80 yards, not going to do too much for him. You play that tough Baltimore defense. So not a whole bunch. You know, are you going to chase Devontae Parker in New England? I don't want to. Mac Jones is injured. You know, so there's not that much on the vine right now.
Yeah. And then there's the one tight end that a lot of people are buzzing about, and that's Njoku in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. It seems like he is the kind of sexy choice for tight end waiver play. If you're short, if you're injured, if you didn't draft very well at that position, which was hard to do this year, all of a sudden a lot of people seem to be looking at him.
Right, and I'll give you actually one more receiver. It slipped my mind. Romeo Dubs out of Green Bay.
Yes, Dubs was a guy that, yes, for sure.
Yeah. And again, I'm not confident, as a quick side note, I'm not fully confident in where Aaron Rodgers is going to be distributing the football, but we've been looking for signs, right? We've been looking for signs. Now, the target share was up significantly over the first 2 weeks, so that's a bit of a red flag, and he had the touchdown, but certainly somebody to pick up and put in, and you hope that trend continues, especially with Watson not being 100%. But, yeah, you get to my guy in Njoku, who I had, and it's a long season. I know I'm not going to take my full victory lap yet here, Pat, but I had him as my sleeper guy to watch out of Cleveland. Jacoby Brissett has been playing better than most people thought. Amari Cooper and Njoku have been that nice 1-2 to complement the Chubb-Hunt combo in the backfield. You play Atlanta, and you know what? Without, it could actually get into a little bit more of an exciting game offensively than we might anticipate, because we don't know the status of Myles Garrett after that car accident. Thank goodness he's okay. No broken bones. You know, Jadeveon Clowney, ankle unknown as of yet. We should know more tomorrow. So you could have Mariota running around, and that might, you know, cause for a few more points. So I think if you're looking for someone off of waivers, we know how thin that tight end group is. So Njoku's as good a pickup as anybody.
Okay, it is time. There is your waiver wire rundown, and now time to jump in for the next 10 minutes or so with Andy McNamara on Twitter. You can get him, Ask Andy. You know where to find him, and he is our fantasy football expert for a reason, at AndyMC81. All throughout the week, hit him with that hashtag, Ask Andy. And now our segment, Ask Andy, with Andy McNamara right now. I'll start with this one, and it's very simpler. Just three words. Austin Eckler, WTF. What is going on with one of the top fantasy players from last season?
Oh, I know. What a mess in with the Chargers, right? You had Justin Herbert getting given needles by the same doctor that punctured the lung for poor Tyrod Taylor. They were a mess. I actually got a couple tweets today where people were saying, should I, trying to give him away in trades and stuff. Like, guys, okay, he's not at the level yet where you drafted him. Absolutely not. However, we know how tough it is to get true RB1s. Austin Eckler, still, especially in PPR, a ton of value. You're playing Houston. This is a money matchup here. This is great. This is a get-right game, potentially, for the Chargers. He hasn't been up to snuff, especially on the rushing side. You know, but still, look at the receptions through three games, 4, 9, and 8. All right. You know, the yardage, not where it needs to be, but Eckler has the talent to break one. Maybe those yards per carry can go up a little bit. Houston's no one to fear. So I think we hold on to Eckler, not the start we wanted, but we have to be patient. He's too talented, and there's not – who are you going to get, Pat? We weren't through guys. You're going to fill in J.D. McKissick for Austin Eckler? Come
on.
No. You're going to stick with Austin Eckler, and you're going to Just hold on. Don't trade Eckler now. You're selling too low. Hold on to him.
What about kind of similar? After a great week one, Justin Jefferson's had a pair of duds for the Vikings in week two and week three. This text is asking, do I start to look for trades while he still has value, or do I hold on for him?
Justin Jefferson is the best wide receiver in the NFL, in my humble opinion. He doesn't have the best quarterback, but this guy is way too talented. And remember, if you're selling after this point, the people in your league will smell the desperation. The stink of desperation will waft through the computer at you. No, you will regret that incredibly if you get rid of Justin Jefferson. No. Again, great week one. Yeah, why you get 4.4 fantasy points against the Detroit Lions? Can't help you with that. I don't know. That's just, you know, nobody can predict that. That's just one of those things. The New Orleans defense can certainly be difficult, right? So it might be a case where, you know, we're looking in the low double digits or teens. Chicago can be had after that. Miami stuff. Like, it's not an easy schedule. We've got the bye week seven. So it's not going to be easy. I'm always a fan of, you know, you dangle a little bit out there. Maybe someone's not paying attention in your league and you can, you know, get something really good. But I don't know. Here's the other part, Pat. What are you going to trade and get in return that's going to give you the possibilities that Justin Jefferson can give you? Right?
Now you're almost certainly losing that trade, right?
Yes, exactly. And for what? We're panicking? Don't panic. Not yet.
Okay. So, two questions. This is a full PPR Superflex League. Number one, at running back, James Conner or Miles Sanders?
You know, I've really liked what Miles Sanders has been able to do. James Conner, the knock on him, of course, has been able to stay healthy. He was banged up. You know, now he did sneak in there, but like he's somebody that he had all the touchdowns last year. I like what Miles Sanders has been able to do. And that is saying something because you still have a Kenneth Gainwell, Boston Scott, and your quarterback can run. But I still like Miles Sanders a bit better. And the matchup, now let's give Jacksonville their due, okay? They've been looking real good. They play Jacksonville, but I would still go with him. And then James Conner plays Carolina. You want to be checking his health. Is it the worst thing in the world to play him? No, but I would still go with Sanders.
That same league, it is a super flex. Daniel Jones or Matt Ryan, I would imagine, is your second quarterback.
Oh, boy. You know what? I have in one of my super flex, I have Danny Dimes. That guy's glue factory, man. Come on now. It's over. It's over. Right? And I'm mad because I had, when he was a rookie, I bought a Daniel Jones two-color jersey patch autographed PSA 9 rookie card. That's plummeted in value. Poor investment. That is not going to age well. Danny Dimes, I would try not to play him. Matt Ryan, you're playing Tennessee. Like, okay, we have to go for what we've seen from the new Matt Ryan. It was a disaster in Jacksonville. And the other two games, you had 16.28 fantasy points and 15.28. He's not throwing the big yardage anymore, or certainly not the touchdowns if he is. So with out of the two, I would still go with Matt Ryan because Daniel Jones is such a disaster. I'll tell you who you look for. Marcus Mariota. I mentioned it earlier. If Myles Garrett, Andrew Davion Clowney doesn't play, that is a great opportunity for Mariota to run and get fantasy points using his legs. So that's probably a play too, Pat, that you don't have to make that decision today. There's not going to be a big run on Marcus Mariota. So you can probably wait out of that example, go with Matt Ryan, to keep an eye out for Mariota.
Andy, I'm sick of Josh Jacobs doing nothing for me and costing me wins each week. So, should I grab Khalil Herbert or start Melvin Gordon or J.K. Dobbins?
Oh, man. I understand. Again, this is early season. We're getting frustrated. You know, you probably spent a decent draft pick on Josh Jacobs. He's not doing... Listen, he had a good week against Tennessee. Got you almost 15 fantasy points. What do you want? Right? It's not bad. Five catches, carried the ball 13 times. Maybe he's coming into his own. Denver, Kansas City, bye. Honestly, I would try rolling with Josh Jacobs again. I would. Because Khalil Herbert is somebody, again, as the handcuff. Do I want to get, like, I would try to get Khalil Herbert for somebody else on your lineup. And if he's going to play instead of Montgomery, for sure, I'd put for this week Herbert over Jacobs, but I wouldn't want to get rid of Jacobs completely.
Couple more of the longer form ones, then we'll dive in on the rapid fire. This from Dustin. Andy, my man, first question of the year. I'm spinning my wheels since Dak Prescott went down. Who would you run this week? Marcus Mariota, Rush in Dallas, or Derek Carr?
Not Rush in Dallas, although real life-wise, I like what they've been doing with them. It's actually a very similar formula that Dallas is doing, that the Browns are doing with their backup quarterback, with Jacoby Brissett. You got two talented running backs. Use them. Don't put too much on the quarterback. So Dallas is doing, and Cooper Rush, real life-wise, I think is doing a very nice job. Derek Carr has sneakily, and you know, it hasn't been good real life-wise because, you know, they haven't won. But fantasy-wise, not a great week one, but fantasy-wise, 19 fantasy points, then 20. Okay, now we're looking waiver wire. Coming back to Denver defense, that Denver team. I'm just sort of turned off because the Russell Wilson side has been so bad. But I would say, depends on the risk reward. I would take a little bit of a chance on Marcus Mariota. Again, if Clowney and Garrett don't play. If one of them play, I would go Carr. If both don't play, I would go Mariota because I think those legs are going to be a factor.
Will Trevor Lawrence crack the top 10 for you in quarterbacks this year?
Oh, this year, well, I do, funny enough, I do have him as my sleeper pick to crack the top 12. Top 10, that's a little too adventurous for me. I love the re-education, and that's really what it is, right? You have to give him the man a mulligan after that Urban Meyer disaster. He bounced back last week. Now, you play Philly this week, Doug Peterson's old team, you know, and Philadelphia has looked incredible. So I wouldn't want to necessarily start my Trevor Lawrence journey in week four. After that, though, you got Houston, Indianapolis, the Giants. That's a pretty good three-game stretch. So, you know, if you want to try to get ahead of the curve and get them now, and, you know, you don't have to give up anything too much, I don't mind them. But I could – there really is a way because Trevor Lawrence is mobile too. He can move. He doesn't have to run, but he can. And so I think there is a world where he could be a top 12 guy.
Final one before we hit the rapid fire. What's up with Joe Mixon? Give up and trade or hold on and hope for better?
You know what? Similar situation as we're looking at with Austin Eckler.
Yeah, I agree.
Now Mixon, ankle injury. Now it looks like he should be, remember, short week for Bengals and Dolphins. You got to track that. So with that questionable, that's not great. The ankle is iffy. Overall, though, again, who are you getting to replace Joe Mixon? Who? You know, if you want to put him on the trade bait and see, and, you know, maybe as part of a package. But I think, again, that improved offensive line, Bengals are good despite their 1-2 record. You stick with Joe Mixon.
Okay, rapid fire time with Andy McNamara. Ask Andy.
Right.
Let's start here. Quarterback, Justin Herbert, Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, boy. You know what? I have to go Aaron Rodgers until I feel comfortable with Herbert's health.
Half PPR at tight end, George Kittle, Pat Freiermuth.
Give me some Kittle as long as he's doesn't get injured again.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Would you drop Higbee for Njoku?
You know what? I think I would. Because Higbee, you know what? Like the tight ends, once you get past the top three or four, it's just they all just lump together. So I would try to go with the hot hand. The reality is, though, Njoku could easily go back to his 3-catch, 30-yard line, but I just got that feel that he won't.
What about this one? Where'd it go? I had a good one. And okay, here we go. Brady or Jameis Winston?
Oh, man. Well, both of them fantasy garbage. Like, Jameis Winston he's playing with literally a broken back. Like, that's tough to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of tough to know, but Tom Brady has looked fantasy-wise, not good at all. Now, he has had a lot of injuries around him also. You're going to get Mike Evans back after the suspension. So I would say, you know what, if we're looking at it, I'll go Tom Brady.
Start two of James Robinson, A.J. Dillon, London, and Penny.
Give me Robinson and London.
Okay.
London's been really good.
I need one of these three at flex. I'm guessing standard. Dubs, Treylon Burks, or Josh Palmer?
You know what? I like Treylon Burks. I have it on one of my teams. Like, I feel he's so close to busting out, but he has that ceiling above him because of the Tennessee offense. So I don't know if he's going to get to where we need him to go. Josh Palmer, if Keenan Allen plays, he goes to the back of the line. So, again, this is a case where you probably aren't going to know about Keenan Allen's health until much closer, maybe even Saturday. So you're going to have to weigh that. I would say right now, if you have to make a decision today, you have to go with Romeo Dubs.
Okay, you've got Tua, you've got Jameis, and you've got Russell Wilson. Who are you starting of the three?
Look, I think Tua, I don't think he's going to keep up with the way he's been doing. He is questionable. Now, I think it's fair to say he's going to play. But back and ankle, that durability issue for Tua coming up. You're playing Cincinnati short week. I'm getting this feel that we're going to see a bit of a grinded out one. And Thursday games are weird. Like there's some, I forget what the stat was, but it was like you always take the under when it comes to total points for Thursday or something, because usually something goes odd or teams aren't ready or whatever it might be. That being said, I'd still go with Tua. The guy's just been, one game removed from that 6-touchdown game. You got Cincinnati, you got the Jets after that. I think you go with Tua.
What about this trade? The Texter is acquiring Ja'Marr Chase and Clyde Edwards-Helaire in exchange for Adam Thielen and Joe Mixon.
So is he getting Thielen and Mixon?
No, he's getting Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Ja'Marr Chase.
Oh, congratulations. You won
That's what
deal.
I thought. That's what I thought.
That's okay. A great.
Do it.
Good job.
Straight up, Mixon for CeeDee Lamb. I don't know which one this texter's getting. So what? Who's better in a trade?
You know what? I would always lean on sticking with the top running back because it's easier to find wide receivers. We can find wide receivers every week on the waiver wire that are going to get you double-digit fantasy points. I cannot guarantee that for running back. So even though Lamb, the player, when Dak comes back, might have a bit of a better upside, position scarcity wise, you got to go with and stick with Mixon.
Two more at flex: Breece Hall of the Jets, Alex Mattison of the Vikings.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna say Breece Hall. The Jets are so weird, right? Like they're sometimes throwing a lot there. You know what? Let's go Breece Hall. I'm not loving either, but I think you go Hall.
And finally, starting three of these four. So I guess sit one of Amari Cooper, Mike Thomas, Jalen Waddle, and Sutton. So I guess you're starting three or sitting one of Cooper, Thomas, Waddle, or Sutton.
Ooh, you know what? A combination of Jameis Winston busted back and Michael Thomas toe injury, even though it's not supposed to be serious. I'm going to say you sit Michael Thomas. That offense right now in New Orleans, it's weird. It's kind of weird, right? And it's, I don't know. I would rather stay away and try to maybe get, have some fun Thursday. Like, I'm hoping, Pat, right? Like, this Thursday night game is fun. Miami, Cincinnati, you got the DraftKings contest. You got the captain spot, right? Like, if we look real quick here to give the viewers or the listeners a chance at this, it's 1.5 times the fantasy points for 1.5 times the $50,000 salary cap for your DraftKings lineup. The thing is, Pat, there's a ton of Qs beside these names. Qs to Waddle, questionable. Tua, questionable. Mixon, questionable. T. Higgins, questionable. I think if you're looking at this for your captain spot, pay up for Ja'Marr Chase and go from there.
You're the best, Andy. Go get Andy on Twitter, at Andy. AndyMC81 is where you can find him on Twitter. All your Ask Andy, just use that hashtag Ask Andy. He's really good on Twitter as well. You're the best. We'll do it again next week. Thank you, pal.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you later. Good luck, everybody.
Andy McNamara is our Sportsnet 960 fantasy football expert on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner. For takeout or delivery, call 403-248-3344 or dine in at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. It's Sportsnet today, and we're catching up with an old pal and diving in to some of the most compelling NFL drafts in history. That's next. It's Sportsnet today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Looking forward to this next chat as our one-hour Sportsnet today rolls on, leading towards Flames Talk at the top of the hour. Pat Steinberg with you from our Sportsnet 960 downtown studios. And full disclosure, this was something that we've been trying to make happen going all the way back to the NHL draft in July, but due to a Rogers network outage that day. It was a bad day for cell phones. And we couldn't do anything. I couldn't text. I couldn't coordinate. So we couldn't do it at the draft, day two of the draft. Okay. So then we tried to do this the following, a number of weeks later. And then the day that we were supposed to do this, Nazem Kadri signed with the Calgary Flames. So again, we had to defer. And finally today, we're doing it. Let's say hello to old Sportsnet 960 pal, Bruce Dobigan. And let's also say hello to the younger Dobigan, Evan, because Bruce and Evan have collaborated on the book, In Exact Science, The 6 Most Compelling Draft Years in NHL History. We're going to dive in on some of that in just a second. But first of all, saying hello to Bruce first, because you're the one that I've been coordinating most with. This is what, the fifth or sixth time we've put this off? So we're finally doing it.
I was sort of thinking that maybe today the Flames would trade for Austin Matthews or something. It seemed like every time we wanted to do this, something significant happened.
Well,
it's just an ordinary day. We'll try to fill it for you.
And then Ev, like, we were texting. We were going to try to do something on day two of the draft, and then we couldn't communicate on day two of the draft, so I didn't know where to find you, so it didn't work out. So I'm glad we can finally do this. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yeah, I was wandering around just trying to find anybody, and I figured you were in the special down on the floor with all the other, you know, the teams and stuff, so I couldn't get there, so that was unfortunate, but now we're getting toward it, so...
Yeah,
for having me on.
I'm not quite special enough to be on the floor. They put me they put me behind the cage so that they need to keep us media people separated. Okay, gents, tell us about the book. The book is called In Exact Science: The 6 Most Compelling Draft Years in NHL History. It's a really fun read. It's gotten great reviews online. So Bruce, where did the idea come from? And how did you how did it start to become a collaboration with Evan?
Well, first of all, I guess this is about my eighth or ninth book, and in two or three of them, I've written about the draft in some degree of seriousness. So I've always been fascinated by it. I did an entire book about why we should get rid of drafts in all the pro sports. That's how manic I get when people talk about drafts. But anyhow, I've been kicking around this idea of doing a book about, you know, the significant drafts in the NHL, and if you had to do all over again that year, what would you do? And in the meantime, of course, Evan came into our business and started working in our business. He runs the Stats Center site for TSN, and he's a bit of a rain man, so I thought, who better? And he's always done my research anyhow. I always send him my stuff and say, is this right, is that right? And he always corrects me, because usually I've got it half done. So anyhow, I sent him the proposal. He said, yes, let's do it. And then it was just, I guess, Ev, our job was to try to figure out the 6 years that really mattered.
Right, yeah, because originally I was thinking one of those, you know, big round numbers, like a 10 or something like that. And it got whittled down to 6 just because there was so much to say about each one that, you know, would have had a huge coffee table size book if you were going in deeper. But so yeah, it became that, and we just figured out what you know, context or what kind of significance would really make the cut. And of course, not necessarily trying to concentrate too many of the years we picked in the same time period. And that being said, we didn't go, you know, too recent, because as anyone can tell you, it's really hard to accurately assess a draft in the historical perspective when you don't, you know, you have to get 10 years plus down the road before you could finally say, oh, now we know, you know, what this is all about. But even then, you have to go even further, because I mean, a player like Alex Ovechkin doesn't win a Stanley Cup until 14 years after he's drafted, so it could take a while. So 2005 is the last chapter, and that's the most recent, and then the other ones are all more ancient, I guess, for younger hockey fans. But that's basically what the sort of criteria we're looking into was, and that's why it came down to this. So there you go.
Now, I have to imagine it would be tough to, like, it would not have been easy to whittle it down to 6 draft years, because some of the ones that I was going through, some I like to do that. You can go down a wormhole on HockeyDB and be there for hours just looking at drafts and sorting by goals or games played. And you're like, oh, that guy played that many games and he was drafted in what round? And so it's interesting to kind of dive in and look at which ones did or did not make the cut. And so that part, Evan, I'm curious how much or how time-consuming that part was, determining which drafts didn't end up making the top 6.
Well, luckily I didn't write about a ton of years and then afterward decide to get rid of them. So it didn't end up being as time consuming as it could have been, because I could have just gone headfirst into it and started doing all kinds of, you know, write-ups, preliminary things about error, you know, and say, oh, here, I've got 10. And then after the fact, find out, no, we need to cut some of those out. So we figured out we were only going to leave it to 6 before I started really, you know, researching. But before that, you know, determining what made the cut, I think it would just have to be not just the quality of the players taken that year, but also the storylines going in, like what was the most intriguing and what really had the biggest impact on the business and the game of hockey in general, rather than, you know, one of the drafts that anybody could have put in if it was being, you know, studied from an analytical scouting standpoint would be the 2003 draft, of course, because just about everybody from that first round became an NHLer, and several of them superstars, and several are going to go to the Hall of Fame and all that. But there was no real that was after the fact. We found out 2003 was so amazing. At the time, the scouts were saying, oh, look, this is the best draft class in however long. But there wasn't really that one compelling thing. You know, the first overall pick was Marc-Andre Fleury. But, you know, there wasn't this crazy thing like a goalie had never been drafted first overall. And then Fleury had a fine career, but it's not like they picked the greatest goalie ever, too. So there's a lot of examples of that year that it wasn't exactly the most riveting thing, you know, ever, despite its impact on the actual, you know, stars of the game. So that's the kind of year that would miss, whereas a year where maybe not everybody was as great, like 1984 is in there because of all the crazy stuff that happened around it. Like, you have defections of people coming from the Iron Curtain. You've got Mario Lemieux, obviously, being the number one pick. But not only that, he's telling the Pittsburgh Penguins they don't want him badly enough. Negotiations are going well, and he's not going to put on their jersey or report to their table. So controversy there. So that's the kind of, you know, thinking that went into choosing certain years over others, I'd say.
Okay, so we got Bruce and Evan Dobigan with us. The book's called Inexact Science, the 6 most compelling draft years in NHL history. I don't, when I do stuff on books, Brucey, I try not to give too much away when we're talking about it. So I don't want to go kind of point through all 6 of the drafts, because I want to leave a lot there to still be discovered. And the book is very much available now. But two of the ones that jumped out to me, and I wasn't aware until I read about the 1971 NHL draft, because the Montreal Canadiens, who at that time kind of had the monopoly on the best French-Canadian players at the time, and that was something that really helped them become the powerhouse franchise they were in the 50s, 60s, and obviously in the 70s. And 1971, they had themselves a really interesting choice at number one overall.
Yeah, of course, that was the Guy Lafleur and Marcel Dion debate. Who would it be? They grew up together in Quebec, playing against each other in junior hockey. Dion eventually went to the OHL to finish his junior hockey, but they grew up together. There was no doubt that they were going to be 1-2 in the draft. The question was, who would they go to? And in fact, one of the things we reveal in our book is that on the night before the draft, the Canadiens' general manager, Sammy Pollock, who's probably the patron saint of this book, because he just invented being a GM in the NHL. He had a chance to get the number one pick from the Red Wings, who were picking second. He could have had Dion and Lafleur at the same time. At the last moment, the staff decided, well, we're not really sure, and we'll just stick with what we got with Lafleur. But just imagine that year. The Canadiens just win the Stanley Cup. That's the Ken Dryden Stanley Cup that nobody expected. And then they walk into this first-round pick, which, of course, Sammy Pollock had managed to get because he got a trade with Oakland, and then Oakland Seals finished last in the league. And so Canadiens win the Cup. They get Dryden coming out of nowhere, and then they get Guy Lafleur to start a whole new generation of success. It's an amazing year.
It's crazy, Ev. Like they and yet you wonder how things would have changed if they decided to go with Marcel Dion, right?
Yeah, that is sort of toward the end of the chapter. We do kind of say, like, what does everybody think would have been the difference if that had happened? And there was a good line where Marcel Dion said, oh, I don't think I could have handled the pressure and the things that Guy went through. I mean, his first 3 years were fine, and he was on a bad team in Detroit, but he would put up big numbers, whereas Guy Lafleur was struggling to find ice time, was not putting up a huge number that everyone expected after a guy who basically scored 100 and 130 goals. Those are his last 2 years of Quebec junior hockey. And so he wasn't even coming close to that potential quite yet, which he eventually did, of course, in year 4. But Dion remarked that, you know, if I had done it, I don't know, I might have jumped off the Jacques Cartier Bridge. I don't know if I would have been able to handle it. And, you know, and Guy remarks that you know, maybe he doesn't have all the cups or whatever, but maybe he's saner too for it, you know, for not the fact that he played his career and mostly in LA in anonymity, not really getting anywhere close to Stanley Cup, which people always would say. Dion would say, people come up to him and say, oh, it's such a shame you didn't win cups. And, oh, I wish you could have been on the Canadiens and won all those cups. And he would just say, you know, I still enjoyed, still had a great career anyway. I'm not feeling sorry for myself, even if other people are. So it's quite interesting. Yeah, and what could have happened if the Canadiens also picked up Dion? I mean, they were their consensus with the scouting staff, with everybody in their upper management, with Sam Pollock, was that maybe it wasn't really worth trading, you know, 3-4 really good assets to get rid of to Detroit just so they could try Dion and LaFleur together, two young
right.
guys perhaps going to play together for years. But in retrospect, the Canadiens, it's almost like they didn't know how deep they really were. In retrospect, they were so like powerful in their minor league system with their prospects that they could have easily afforded to give away 3 or 4 of their top ones for Dion and just never missed a beat, really. So,
yeah. And then the other one I that really jumped off the page to me, everybody, Evan, talks about the kind of the start of the powerhouse Detroit Red Wings. Everybody points, first of all, to 1983. That's the year that they got Steve Yzerman, fourth overall. And obviously, Yzerman became the youngest captain in Red Wings and at the time NHL history and you know, started his Hall of Fame career and was a huge part of Detroit becoming the powerhouse they'd become in the 1990s. But it took some time. Whereas the 1989 draft, that was a draft that if you look back at the kind of way things would go for Detroit, if they don't go about their business the way they did in 1989, maybe they don't win all those cups in the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, absolutely, because you look at it, and the top two picks they had that year, they weren't, you know, going to risk going with some European player or even, you know, someone from behind the Iron Curtain or even in USSR who wasn't necessarily guaranteed of coming over. Because in 1989, there were no assurances. I mean, we're in a similar climate now where if you take a Russian player, you never know if you're going to see them down the road in terms of, you know, coming over to play North America. But at the time, it was the same, except maybe even more locked in because of political systems that maybe if you take a guy like a Sergei Fedorov or a Pavel Bure or Vladimir Konstantinov, two of those three obviously going to Detroit that year, you might not get to see them for years, if ever, because there had been examples like the Canadians and had tried taking late round flyers on Vladislav Tretiak, on Vyacheslav Fedosov, and neither of those guys. I mean, by the time like the rights had lapsed to them, it was too late. Those guys eventually came, or at least Fedosov came to the NHL many years later with the Devils. So they were taking a risk, but their first two picks that year were North American prospects, and they took Mike Sillinger and Bob Bugner, who both had very good journeyman careers, but neither of them were close to Hall of Fame. And so it's pretty accurate to say that if the Red Wings hadn't taken those risks, their Stanley Cup glory would have been far more muted if they would have won at all. Because that's what really made them stand out, is that they took that risk and were able to get all those guys. And a year later, they took Kozlov. I mean, they also were so great at drafting out of Sweden that all that together made them such an model franchise for the next like 25 years after that, basically. Yeah.
Felt a two-decade run for him.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce, anything else that you want to tease in the book without giving too much away? Any of the other we've talked about a couple of them. Any of the other ones that really kind of tickled your fancy as you were going through it?
Well, I mean, just apropos the Red Wings too. The Red Wings' secret weapon in Europe turned out to be a guy who was a cab driver who used to pick up Neil Smith at the airport when he came to scout in Sweden. And Neil Smith found out that Christer Rockström knew hockey, knew all the best hockey players going, and was an expert on it. And he ended up being the key to their early European scouting. He was a cab driver. One of the other ones I always say, 79 was a fantastic year, of course. You not only had the merger and the WHA merger, lots of guys coming in from that, but then the NHL changes, of course, from 18 to 20, from 20 to 18 for the draft coming in. And, of course, the great question that can win you a beer in a bar anytime, who is the greatest offensive player in the history of the NHL who was not drafted? And, of course, that was Wayne Gretzky. Peter Pocklington's sly move, in which he didn't have to expose Gretzky to the draft, got to keep him himself. It was one of the great heists of all time. The Colorado Rockies thought they'd get him. There's lots of flame stuff in this book, too, for people. The opening story where Eric Duhatchik, who we all know quite well, now writing for The Athletic, talks about how Ian MacKenzie scouted Gary Suter and discovered that Gary Suter in the Central Hockey scouting book was 5'9", but by the time McKenzie got to see him, he was 6 feet tall and 200 pounds. And McKenzie's job was to try to keep it a secret from the rest of the NHL so the Flames could draft him. And, of course, there you go. He ended up taking the Rookie of the Year for the Flames in a couple of years. I guess it was 84, 85 that he was the Rookie of the Year. So lots of those kind of stories, Shaggy Dog stuff.
Well, and once again, by the way, the book is called Inexact Science, the 6 most compelling draft years in NHL history. We've got a copy to give away in just a second. Bruce has got, if you were listening, especially most recently, if you were listening, we got a trivia question for you on the text line at 960-960, and we will get you a copy of the book Inexact Science, breaking down the 6 most compelling draft years in NHL history. Before we ask the question, though, Bruce, where can we get the book? Where is it available? How can somebody get their hands on a copy?
Books available at the Chapters Indigos in the city of Calgary or across the country. You can get it online on Amazon. You can get it online on the Indigo online across the country. If you know of a small private bookstore, do them a favor and buy it from them. And then you can also find it and all of my books on my website, brucedobiganbooks.ca. Not only do you see that book, but then you'll see all of the others that I've done over the years, going back to 1992, when I did a book called The Defense Never Rests.
And here is the trivia question. If you were listening recently, you may have picked up on it already. But your trivia question at 960-960 for a copy of the book. Here is your question. Need your first and last name on the text and the right answer. Which Flame, drafted in 1984, would go on to win the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year down the road? Once again, what Flame 1984 pick would go on to win the Calder Trophy? We'll get you that answer in just a second at 960-960, then we'll get your information off to Bruce and get you a copy of the book. It's called Inexact Science, the 6 Most Compelling Draft Years in NHL History by Bruce and Evan Dobigan. Evan, it's too bad we couldn't do this in Montreal. That would have been fun to do it on the floor. But nonetheless, I'm glad we were able to finally do it. Evan, thanks for coming on, man. It's good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Pat.
Bruce, good to talk to you, pal. It's good to catch up. Be well, hey?
And you too. We'll see you down the road somewhere, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We thank the gentlemen for joining us on the program today. Bruce and Evan Dobigan, The Inexact Science, the 6 Most Compelling Draft Years in NHL History. It's a Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. As we start to wrap up our hour here around the corner, we've got Flames Talk, where we are busy kicking it off with Frank Saravelli. But I have you the answer, and lots of people were listening very, very carefully. And I've got tickets to give away, Flames tickets to give away in the 5 o'clock hour of Flames Talk as well. I'm going to do the same thing and make sure that our streaming listeners have time to get into the trivia question, because a couple people were giving me the gears. Like, could you at least give us streaming people a chance to win? Yes, so I'm going to do that both on this one. And we give away Flames tickets in the 5 o'clock hour. Congratulations to, as we hit random, congratulations to Kevin. Kevin, you have won the book from Bruce and Evan Dobigan, and you've won a copy. If your name is Kevin and you get a text from me during the break, you're the winner. If you don't, unfortunately, you're not. But try for the Flames tickets a little bit later on. The correct answer, 1984 ninth round pick Gary Suter, would go on to win the Calder Trophy a couple of years later. How about that? One of the best defensemen in franchise history, ninth round pick in 1984. Congratulations to Kevin. He got that right. You're getting a copy of the book. By the way, the gents joined us, Evan and Bruce Dobigan, on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner. For takeout or delivery, call 403-248-3344 or dine in at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. That'll wrap us up on a short one-hour version of Sportsnet Today, but our afternoon block is just getting started. We're going till 7 o'clock and we've got Flames Talk for you around the corner. We kick off hour one of Flames Talk with NHL insider Frank Saravelli. He joins us next. Stay with us on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.